We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
With the 21st pick in the NFL draft, the Miami Dolphins select.
First round of the NFL draft is tonight. It is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop hundreds of Toyotas indoors in one of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. Joe.
Thank you, Woody. Simon Clancy, 3 yards per carry podcast, joins us this morning. Simon, good morning, man. How you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
We're doing great, Simon. And listen, we've all had our opinions on what the Dolphins should do if they keep that first-round pick tonight. I'm just curious for you. You study all this stuff and the breakdowns of what's out there and what potentially could be at that 21st pick. What's the biggest need for this team to get better for you tonight if for the first round? What would it be?
That's a really good question, because I think the Dolphins, Omar and I were talking about this the other day, the Dolphins have done a really good job of kind of positioning themselves in free agency where there isn't a massive need anywhere. I think, obviously, the offensive line could do with some improvement, but then, you know, you roll back 12 months and Chris Greer talking to the media and saying, you know, you guys care about the offensive line a lot more than we do. I think the defensive line, obviously, we're not going to have Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips at the start of the season, or if we are, they're not going to be back to 100%. And I think what's missing, maybe, and if you look at what Anthony Weaver was successful with in Baltimore when he had Justin Madubuike last season, he had all these big kind of rotational defensive tackles alongside Madubuike, but he was this kind of slightly undersized guy who was able to rack up 12, 13 sacks, first team All-Pro, and the Dolphins don't really have that guy. Obviously, Christian Wilkins was here. He's gone to the Raiders. Zach Sealer obviously does a job and had an outstanding year with sacks, but the NFL is predicated on inside pressure these days. You don't have these big 340, 350 pounders like your Sam Adamses and your Gilbert Browns and Chester McLaughlins and these guys anymore. It is based on guys that are just around 300 pounds, 305 pounds, who can affect the pocket, who can pressure from the inside and can get after the quarterback. So I do think the Dolphins will be looking at a couple of players there as well. I think that might be a key need. For me personally, it would be off the offensive line, just to make sure that Tua's okay and keep him upright and not have the same problems we had the last couple of years. But I do think defensive line as well, very important.
Simon, you know what? You and I should have been friends a long time ago, man. You took the words right out of my mouth the last few months. I'm with you. Go ahead, Omar. I'm sorry.
Listen, Simon, here's my thought process about this draft. And we know where the Dolphins are at 21. They're not in 55. And then the sloppy seconds in the third round. I mean, in the third day. Yeah. They're not going to be able to address everything. Here's my concern. Yep. Where do you put your priority in terms of getting offensive line help or getting defensive line help, whether it be an edge guy or a defensive tackle? Where, based on the fact what you know about this draft class, where do you put your priorities in day one and day two?
I mean, I think the Dolphins can't afford another mulligan in with their first pick. Cam Smith, you know, looks like a talented player, could develop into a player, but did nothing last season. The year before, Channing Tindall, again, two mulligans back-to-back. The window is beginning to close for the Dolphins in terms of the talent they have. They're about to pay the quarterback, Tyreek, and his contract. There's lots of big contracts that are just building and building and building. So the window is open. They can't afford to miss with these first two picks today and tomorrow. They have to get either significant performers in terms of playtime or full-time starters. So I just don't think that they can draft somebody like a Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, who we know they've had huge interest in. Butch Barry went down to the Oklahoma Pro Day, was running the drills. We know that Tyler has been on a 30 visit at the Dolphins, but he's a right tackle only. They've just paid Austin Jackson. So where is Tyler Guyton going to play? The idea is that he's going to move to the left side later in his career, but Terron Armstead is there, and you're probably not going to want to put Tyler Guyton out at left tackle, a position he's rarely played in the NFL as a rookie. Amarius Mims, the guy at Georgia, exactly the same. He's too big to play guard. So where does he play? He's a career right tackle, 8 starts. He's going to go in the first round almost certainly. He's too raw to play at left tackle. And we just had the same conversation about Tyler Guyton. To me, they have to find a guy that can step in day one and start, and whether that's a defensive lineman or whether that's an offensive lineman. So, for example, Graham Barton of Duke played left tackle, 2,665 career snaps at Duke, has played up and down the line, every position, five position versatility. He could play centre. He's almost certainly a guard, but he's probably good enough to play left tackle. He's 6'5", he's 313. You look at his tape against Jared Verse of Florida State, he was outstanding. He's got shorter arms, but the last guy with his size and the same short arms was a guy called David Bakhtiari, who was taken in the fourth round and turned into probably the best left tackle in the NFL for 3 or 4 years with the Green Bay Packers. Barton is a guy that will come in, start left guard next to Terron Armstead on day one. And to me, that's an absolute no-brainer. And it's the same with the defensive line. You look, to me, there's three edge players that I think would be worthy of that pick. I think Dallas Turner will be gone. Leatu Latu of UCLA should be gone, but the only reason he wouldn't, to me, he's the best defensive player in the draft. But there are medical concerns. He was medically retired 2 years ago with a neck injury, came back, played 2 years at UCLA. But the Dolphins have shown historically with Tua, with Jalen Phillips, that they are not as concerned about injury issues as some other teams have been. You listen to people like Greg Cosell, you listen to people like Daniel Jeremiah, you listen to Bob McGinn. Some teams have taken Leatu Latu off their boards because of the injury. I don't believe the Dolphins will do that. So to me, Leatu Latu is the best pass rusher in the draft. He's a fantastic pass rusher. The ability to get to the quarterback and what he does, his pass rush arsenal is phenomenal. So again, there's a guy that can come in sub-packages and contribute day one. Jared Verse, we talked about him earlier on from Florida State. He's a guy that can play the run. He can set the edge, but also he can get after the quarterback. Albany transfer. I love the way that over the last couple of years, he's just worked and worked and worked to improve his game. Another day one starter for me. So I think you've just got to find players who are going to come in and contribute immediately. You can't have another Cam Smith sat on the sideline. You can't have another Channing Tindall only playing special teams.
I've been selling Omar on, you sound like a Joe Rose echo right here, man. I am with you on all this stuff. So I got to ask you, this love affair going on, Xavier Worthy, and of course, I get it. We got a fast team, and now we got the fast guy in the history of the combine and a 40-yard dash out there, and they're talking, does that pick make any sense in the first or second round for you to take with all these other needs? Would that shock you if they took Worthy or another wide receiver with their first or second round pick?
I don't think it shocked me, Joe, to be honest. I think this offense, as you said, is predicated on speed. But what I found with Worthy, and I'm concerned about the size, I know he dropped down to 169 at the combine so that he could break the record. He plays in the mid-170s. He is obviously vastly undersized, deep threat, but he is an elite ball tracker, probably along with Jermaine Burton of Alabama, the best ball tracker in the draft. He's got the speed to run away from absolutely anybody, and we know that that's what this offense loves so much. He does a lot of I dug back into the tape after the combine because the size, as I said, concerned me, and I saw Mike McDaniel look at him at the we all saw the photo at the Texas Pro Day where Mike was kind of in awe, as it were, because he sees a guy like a Ferrari that can come in and do special things in this offense. So I went back to the tape, Joe, and I saw him doing so much unrewarded dirty work in the Texas offense in terms of how he was able to just go up and down the field running routes that would allow the running backs, Jonathan Brooks, allow Jatavion Sanders to work underneath, allow Jordan Whittington to work underneath, allow Quinn Ewers to do what he does underneath, because the speed that Worthy has essentially just takes away the number one corner, and then teams just have to roll a safety over the top. And he just did that over and over and over again. And I think that having that ability and having that speed, you know, you line up in a four wide set where you've got Xavier Worthy, Devon Achane, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. I mean, that is hard for anybody to stop. So would I be surprised if it happened? No. Would I be happy if it happened? I'd kind of be on the fence with it because I trust Mike McDaniel and what he can do with the offense, but I absolutely wouldn't be surprised if it was either Worthy or maybe Brian Thomas or even Brock Bowers if he began to fall.
Yeah, so Simon, we get this all the time because people are, and I understand tonight's about being sexy and getting a skilled player that everybody will know and talk about. So the big dudes aren't real popular, especially on the first round of the draft for a lot of people. I just wonder, because we get beat up around, oh, we're soft in the end of the year.
The powerful teams
knock us around. And so and Mike's going, let's get more speed. speed for December and January. Well, what are your thoughts on that when you hear that the Dolphins seem to be soft? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, look, these guys play an incredibly violent game, and they are, I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility when we look at you know, what's happened with concussion over the last 10, 15 years in terms of how things have manifested with that, that these guys are putting their lives, their livelihoods, their bodies on the line for our entertainment. So I think to call these players soft is a difficult thing for me to say. But I do think that there is a softer core, that the Dolphins historically feel like a team that is going to collapse in the biggest moment. And I think for Mike McDaniel, that might be the biggest issue that he has to solve going forward. I was in Kansas City in the playoff game, and I knew as soon as the Dolphins went down, as soon as the scoreboard looked like they were going to lose, you knew they were going to lose. I did not expect them to march into Baltimore at the end of the season and beat the Ravens. I just didn't. It's a different thing in week three when they can come back from 35-14 down and win the game. As great as that was, and it was great, I'm taking nothing away from that performance, but I just didn't feel like they were going to go and march into M&T Bank at the end of the season last year and win. And I don't know what that is. I don't know how you solve that, because, you know, we've all been around the Dolphins. We've all been around the locker room. I've been in numerous Dolphins locker rooms last season. You know, you see guys like Christian and Zach and Teron, and these are tough guys. These are hard guys. These are, you know, these are not soft players. So I don't understand, and I don't know what it is, and or what the mentality and mindset is, but it needs to change. And if that starts tonight by taking some guys that have that kind of, you know, punch you in the mouth mentality and aren't going to be afraid to go to Kansas City in the snow and turn the Chiefs over, who aren't going to be afraid to go to Buffalo in December, who aren't going to be afraid to host Buffalo in December and take what, you know, take that division title back, then, you know, I'm all for that. But that would, to me, would be the biggest question that Mike McDaniel has asked himself this season, is how and why do we keep collapsing, and what is it about the core of this team that doesn't seem to get over the line in the big games?
Did you hear Omar, by the way, Simon, take that little jab? They are soft. Like, he never stops, man. Omar never stops.
I don't think even Mike McDaniel can deny the fact that they have a soft reputation. I think he even addressed it in Hard Knocks. I think he's right.
I just don't know how he addresses it.
Let me ask you a little bit about the secondary, because, you know, for all that we're talking about with the trench players and the speed players, and we know where this team needs to address, I think there's a good chance that a cornerback, they might be in position to take one of those upper echelon cornerbacks, and certainly they'll be in position to take one of the upper echelon safeties, maybe a Cam Kitchens, who I've got a man crush on.
In the first round.
Not in the first round, definitely not. Okay. But Where do you think, what player in the secondary would be worthy in your mind for them to say, okay, 21, this is the BPA, this is the player that presents the best value?
This is a difficult one, because I don't think anybody knows. You can kind of gauge what Anthony Weaver is going to do with the defensive line, because historically that's been his area, both as a player and a coach. It's harder to gauge what they might do in the secondary, because we just don't know. We've had that 1 year of experience with the Texans where he was DC, and it was pretty vanilla on the back end. We obviously saw what happened last year with Baltimore, where he was assistant head coach and the defensive line coach in Mike McDonald's defense. And they had a very specific player in that defense, which was Kyle Hamilton, who is an absolute alien at 6'4". He's 220 pounds. He runs in the 4.4s, and he played multiple positions. To me, before he got injured, he would have been my vote if I had one for Defensive Player of the Year last year. You line him up at free safety, you line him up at strong safety, he can play in the nickel, he can play outside at corner, he can play as a box safety, he can run the alley, he can play at linebacker, he took snaps as an edge. He played the old Tiger formation that we used to play with Jason Taylor, where Jason sort of dropped off into sort of middle linebacker and blitz. He also played a snap at defensive tackle, which tells you how good he is. There are not players like that, and how do you rebuild or try and build a defense around a player like that when he is almost certainly one of a kind? But there is a player in this draft, in Iowa's Cooper DeJean, who has the ability not to be Kyle Hamilton, but has the ability to be a Swiss Army knife. You know, you look up the word Swiss Army knife in the dictionary, and underneath Kyle Hamilton, you will see the collegiate version might just be Cooper DeJean, who was a cornerback at Iowa, but also played free safety. He played box linebacker. He played the cash position at Iowa, which is a sort of free safety linebacker hybrid. And you look at his athletic ability in terms of his performance at the combine. He performed outstanding at the combine. This is a guy who was a state champion in basketball. He was a state champion twice in football. He was a state champion in the 100 meters. He was a state champion in the long jump. He scored more points in basketball in high school hoops than Harrison Barnes, who now plays for the Sacramento Kings. He won a championship in AAU basketball. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, athletically can do anything. Where do you play him? He's a bit sticky in the hips. He's probably a zone corner. Now, are the Dolphins playing man on the outside? Are they playing zone? Mike McDonald at Baltimore last year played 73% of zone coverage. So, you know, if there is a copycat of what McDonald did last year for Anthony Weaver, does that make Cooper DeJean more of an option to play as a pure corner? But to me, you play him at safety, you play him at nickel, you can run the alley with it. You can do some of the things that you did with Kyle Hamilton. The flip side of that is you also have a player in Javon Holland who is extremely athletic, extremely cerebral, can play multiple positions. Don't forget, when he was at Oregon, he sat out his final year because of COVID. The year before, he played 8 snaps at free safety and everything else was in the slot. And the year before that, half the season he played at free safety and half of the season he played in the slot. So this is a guy who can play multiple positions on the back end. And if you bring in Cooper DeJean, you already have Kyle Fuller and Jalen Ramsey on the outside who can play lockdown either in man or in zone. We know from Anthony Weaver that he's going to move Jalen Ramsey around. But you could have this Swiss Army knife like a Cooper DeJean who can come in and play multiple positions. He's also going to be an outstanding gunner from day one, and he's a great punt returner as well. So, you know, there are lots and lots of options for a guy like DeJean. There are other corners I like. I really like Kool-Aid McKinstry of Alabama. I think he's a really, really good player. There's guys in the second round I think are really good. Andrew Phillips at Kentucky I think is a really good player. Max Melton at Rutgers in terms of pure corners. But to me, if you're looking for that kind of Swiss Army knife, I think that Cooper DeJean could really fill an important role for the Dolphins should they want to go in that sort of Kyle Hamilton kind of area.
Simon, last question, we'll let you run, and we really appreciate all this great information this morning before tonight's first round of the NFL draft. I want to ask you, you followed Chris Greer and what he's done, and you think good chance he might trade out of that pick tonight and try to pick up an extra second or third round pick, if not both?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I just think, Joe, it's just going to depend on how the board falls. Because like I said right at the top, they're in a decent position in multiple positions in how they've brought in players to fill some needs and fill some holes and fill some gaps and probably improve the bottom third of the roster. I think getting back into that third and fourth round area would be important, but I don't think to the detriment of taking just a guy that you think can come in and do something really. You know, if a guy like Bowers falls, who's had an extraordinary draft season in terms of, you know, he's not worked out. He didn't work out at the combine. He ran about 12 lackadaisical routes at the Georgia Pro Day. He's not done anything. If he begins to fall, if he gets past the Jets, if he gets past Denver, if he gets towards Cincinnati, the Dolphins have essentially got 3 third-round picks next year. They've got their own third-round pick, obviously, and then they're getting 2 compensatory picks in the third round for the guys they've lost this year. Would Chris Greer consider getting rid of his own third-round pick next year, knowing he's already got 2 to move up in the draft? So I think that's also not beyond the realms of possibility. But I also think moving down, it's a long way to wait from pick 55 into the 100 and whatever it is that we're on the board next in the fifth round to just sit there and watch good player after good player after good player go off the board. So I wouldn't be surprised if they move down, but I wouldn't want to do it to the detriment of a good player at 21.
Simon, the best thing I like this morning with you, and I know you feel, and it's because I feel the same way, whatever they do with these picks, these top picks, they need to be able to come in and play right away and not go on Omar's 4-year plan where they're going to be good in like 3 or 4 years when they're up for a new contract.
100%.
Hey, thank you, Simon. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Joe. All right. My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.